Everybody, Sarah back again, and today we're going to be having a little talkie-walkie about the single sign-on and technology integration with Eric Clark, the CEO of Orion Advisor Services. Hey, Eric!
Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Cool. So, hey everyone, this is Sarah, and welcome to my show. I'm looking at the Orion Advisor integration page, and the deck is stacked. I mean, literally stacked. There's Redtail, Salesforce, Advocent, MoneyGuide Pro, Riskalyze. So, Eric, I'm assuming you played a part in all of this, seeing that you're the CEO of the company. Tell me about this. How come you did that?
You know, we're big believers that advisors should be able to use technology to create operational efficiencies. So having the amount of data that we have, you know, first and foremost, we bring in data on behalf of our advisors' clients, wherever those accounts are custodied. We reconcile them, make sure that they're in good order for our advisors to come in and trade and rebalance those accounts. And we wanted to make sure that they could use that reconciled data, that clean data, in the other systems that they used at their firm easily, efficiently, and make sure that the operational workflows created consistent results by using, you know, one true source of account data across the firm.
Uh-huh. And what's the advantage of someone doing something like this?
Well, from our perspective as a technology provider, you know, we can't be all things to all of our advisors. We focus and serve independent fiduciary advisors. These independent fiduciary advisors have different value propositions that they offer to their clients. And as a result of having these different value propositions, they simply need to use different technologies to help accentuate those value propositions to the investors and prospects that they serve. And so from our perspective, since we can't provide all the technology an advisor needs, why not make a great integration experience? And so we created an API layer in our technology stack that would allow other tech companies to come in and efficiently and easily interact with that clean data that we've assembled for our advisors. So if you think of it outside of the financial, outside of the fintech arena, let's look at, you know, our smartphones that we use. Your smartphone, Sarah, and my smartphone are going to have different apps on them, and that's okay. You know, if you're Android or Apple, you didn't come out with a smartphone that only had a predefined set of apps. And that's exactly the mindset that we applied towards our business here at Orion as we work with independent fiduciary advisors. So we created an open architecture environment allowing other fintech companies to come in and interact with the data and information to create operational efficiencies for our advisors and drive a great client experience.
Right. So you kept saying independent and fiduciary. Now, this is something that's come into the public eye a little bit with the recent Reg BI announcement from the SEC. Now, for those of you who are not following this, now I have an opinion about this, which is, who really cares? I don't know that this is going to be really that impactful. Just stay tuned. You'll hear a lot more outspoken commentary on this from me in the future, financial advisors. But they said that there's the form CRS relationship summary that will require investment advisors and broker-dealers to provide investors with easy to understand information about the nature of their relationship with their financial professional. Splendid. And then also, there was the idea of broker-dealers being required to act in the best interest of a retail customer when making a recommendation. This is quoted from the press release here. I was reading it. Like I said, you're going to see my real opinion on this here in the future. But so this is interesting, Eric. So are you saying you just work with RIA firms? You work with broker dealers, hybrid? Who?
At Orion, we specifically work with registered investment advisors. And the thing that's most concerning to our firm and the redefining of fiduciary is the change of one word from and to or. So fiduciaries under the SEC rules used to have to do what's in the client's best interest and disclose all conflicts of interest. That has been changed to doing what's in the client's best interest or disclose all conflicts of interest. And that one simple change from and to or is most concerning to us because we are believers that fiduciaries should do both. They should do what's in the client's best interest and disclose any conflicts of interest. I don't see how it's in the investor's best interest to have fiduciary redefined in the manner that they have chosen to do so.
You're talking about Reg BI.
Yes. As an industry, we should be constantly looking for ways to improve the public's perception of financial services, financial service companies. You know, we don't consistently rate very highly in the public with regard to our overall industry's reputation. And when you have things like fiduciary watered down, it's a big deal because it creates more opportunities for advice to be provided that is not in that client's best interest. And for us, we are believers that we could all do a better job of better representing the investors that we serve. And to have a rule redefined and watered down, a definition as simple as fiduciary, what does that mean? To water that down, I think, really is harmful to our entire industry. Just by changing one word, that's all they did. They went from and to or, but gosh, it created created a mess. And you're seeing states like Massachusetts step in and say, hey, you know what? That doesn't work for us. We're going to actually define fiduciary differently than how the SEC has defined it. So to do business with clients in the state of Massachusetts, you're going to have to adhere to a different fiduciary standard. So in essence, by watering it down, we've created an opportunity to potentially have 50 states come in and redefine what it means to be a fiduciary. I think that's incredibly confusing to the general investing public.
There are
something that we need to do a better job of addressing. You are exactly right. They're already confused. What happened is only going to make it worse.
This is so interesting. I mean, so let me tell you a story. I recently was talking with someone in my family who's a really intelligent person, and he was looking for an investment advisor. And so I was like, okay, you got to get one that's a fiduciary. What's a fiduciary? So, and this person is so intelligent, educated, book smart, street smart, everything. I mean, it took like five articles. And I don't even think by the end of the conversation he even really got it. I mean, I think this stuff is just, this is legalese that's not really interesting to begin with. And so naturally people don't pay attention as much. But even the ones that do find it to be highly confusing at best.
You're exactly right. And we were just starting to make some good progress there. I think, you know, the surveys were showing that generally speaking, people were becoming more and more familiar with what it means to do business with a fiduciary instead of a broker. And just as soon as we were getting to that point where it was about to become understood and the differences were clearly articulated, generally speaking, they redefined what it means to be a fiduciary. And I think in doing so, really we're taking a step back as an industry. And this is something that I hope we see the regulators step in and adjust as we move forward.
Well, I mean, how are they really going to execute this is my question. Because what you're really doing is, you know how many investment advisors there are, the SEC is already under-resourced. How are they going to put this into effect is my question.
When you have firms that are audited on average every 7 to 8 years, I think that is another area that needs to be addressed, with the regulators. I think that we either need to get into a situation where the SEC audits firms on a more regular basis or requires that firms have some type of outside firm, like an accounting firm, come in and audit them. Now, I'll tell you why it's worth the expense. It's worth the expense because, again, going back to that industry profile, if we can do a better job of raising the amount of confidence, faith, and trust that the general public has in doing business with financial service companies, we're all better off. Everybody will benefit as a result.
It's funny, the general public really does not trust financial people. Like, I had it the worst. I was at one point employed by an insurance company as an agent and then got my licenses to be in their broker dealer. But like, especially the younger people, like the millennials were like they did not even want to talk to me. It was enough to just say, I work at name of company that I'm not going to say in this podcast. But do you know that people trust people, like, so even like banks, they don't trust, financial advisors, they don't trust. Do you know people trust the military more than they trust banks in the United States?
Well, coming out of the 2008 financial crisis, I think we were all shaken by what previously were known to us as trusted brands that had, generally speaking, served clients well. And, as things unraveled, we learned that maybe these brands that we had trusted didn't have their investors and their clients' best interests at heart. And so, again, when we go in and we redefine something as simple as fiduciary, now all of a sudden we don't have that common basis to build from. We don't have that common understanding because now a fiduciary, if an investor says, hey, are you acting as a fiduciary? The answer can be yes. They may not be acting in that person's best interest. Instead, they're simply disclosing to them all of their potential conflicts of interest. And that's where the issue lies. And again, I don't know exactly how this will get fixed, but hopefully by the state stepping in, taking some action, it may create some desire on the SEC's part to come in and correct what I would view as a bit of a misstep here.
I mean, yeah. And I mean, what do they have to disclose it in the form ADV, right? How many people read the form ADV?
Not very many.
No, no one reads it. And if they do read it, it's so confusing, boring, and written in legalese. They fall asleep after like a minute of reading it. Do you know people I have seen in my experience, people, because by the way, every time I work with somebody, I check their ADV actually. Every investment advisor I work with, so if you're my clients here, all of you on the podcast, like, I'm checking you out. I do check you all out. Hope you check me out. Anyways, but do you know that there are people with criminal records? Like, there are literally people that have committed like felonies even, and they're still working in the industry. And it's disclosed on their ADV, and people are still doing business with these companies. They have thriving businesses. They have six-figure incomes. And they have felonies. It's disclosed on the ADV. No one reads it.
Well, and I do think as we go forward, both the regulators and advisors can use technology in a very efficient way to operate in a compliant fashion. So I think that we're going to be able to see some real strides being made in that regard. You know, it used to be that a lot of these compliance requirements required an incredible amount of overhead and cost on the part of the firm. As we move forward and we and use technology to break down those barriers, automate processes, utilize the data and the information in a very efficient way, you'll see the firm's ability to stay in compliance. That burden will be much, much easier than it has been historically. So for instance, it used to be that, to monitor employee trading, as an example, you would have to go through a process of comparing your staff's trades against the trades that the firm has made on behalf of clients. And in order to do that, it was required a lot of overhead and supervision. And going forward, there are technology tools. We certainly offer one at Orion with a tool that we call Inform, where firms can deploy the technology and those trades are reviewed and cleared and supervised in a highly automated fashion, so that the CCOs at the firms are simply reviewing the red flags, the outliers, those trades that are suspect or that need to be reviewed. There are still false positives that come through, but those are quickly resolved. And so you can use technology to lift the regulatory burden and actually comply at a much more at a much higher rate than historically using manual spreadsheets or systems to track this type of information. And I think technology is the great equalizer, and we think of technology in terms of breaking down barriers for people to do business with companies or companies being able to provide products and services to people, but it also applies between a business and its ability to comply with regulatory requirements. Technology can be a great equalizer in that regard as well. As we apply tech towards compliance, we're seeing, great strides being made, great efficiencies being gained, and firms complying at a much higher rate than they have been able to historically.
So within the independent fiduciary space, what would you say that, what are you seeing in terms of the future?
Well, I always mention to firms that, that we do business with, at Orion specifically, we have a culture that relies on three pillars. And the pillars are innovate, disrupt, and win. And innovation is a mindset that we all need to have as we're applying our services, our capabilities, our brand experience, if you will, as it lends itself to doing business with an investor. So we want to make sure that our independent fiduciary advisors are on the forefront of being able to provide a great experience. And to do that, we kind of have to disrupt ourselves a bit. We have to disrupt our historical business models. We certainly have to look outside of our industry towards other industries. What are they doing? How are they accentuating a great client experience? How are they interacting and using technology to push beyond traditional ways of thinking? Uh-huh. And as we do that, we get to that third pillar, which is win. We're able to help our firms grow and win more than their fair share of business opportunities and prospect opportunities that they have available to them. So I think having that cultural mindset of innovate, disrupt, and win is really critical. And as we apply that and look outside of our own industry at innovations taking place in other industries and bring those ideas and concepts back and apply them within our own four walls at the firms that we respectively that we run, we'll position ourselves and our business in such a way that we, in essence, we future-proof our business, if you will, because we're on the forefront of leading change instead of becoming a victim of change and letting that change overrun the ways that we currently do things and think about things.
What other industries are you referring to?
I think that there are simple examples of that that we've experienced. If you look at, you know, gosh, when we were teenagers, we would go to Blockbuster Video, we would rent a video. Now you would never, you know, get in the car and go out and look for a DVD at a rental store. You simply get connected, your TV's connected to Netflix, you know, and that Netflix user experience is really great. It's organized in a way that, hey, these things, based on what you've recently watched, might be of interest to you. Hey, these are things that everyone else is interested in. So how do we take that type of experience, that very disruptive experience that happened to Blockbuster when Netflix came to be, how do we take that type of experience and relay that back to our client experience? How do we allow our clients to see how they're doing relative to other people in a similar demographic? How do we allow our clients to see how they're charting in relation to their goals and objectives that they've defined for themselves? Mm-hmm. You know, we need to take those types of experiences and bring them back to our industry and apply them within our own businesses.
Well, that's interesting. You just said something really interesting there. Have your clients see how they're doing relative to other people in their demographic. Can you, I have not heard that before. Can you tell me more about that?
Sure. So you could see, you know, allow the client, for instance, to compare themselves against national averages. You know, how is my savings, what my rate of savings, how does that compare to others? How does the amount of money that I've save for retirement compared to other people that are of a similar age to me? There are big data sources out there and available that I think you'll start to see tech companies start to integrate within their own offerings to provide that type of experience.
But,
I'll tell you another.
Does anyone do that right now? Does that, like, can advisors tell somebody you've saved, like, you're 39, you've saved $500,000, you're ahead of like 95% of 39-year-olds?
Absolutely. It's an easy comparison. It's publicly available information. Nobody's using it yet in a very tech-savvy way, but it's something that's certainly on our roadmap here at Orion, is that we want to constantly be looking at those big data sources, those experiences, again, if you will, outside of fintech, bring those back and help our advisors innovate, disrupt, and win.
Yeah. No, I like that, because that's the whole thing now with, like, you see it with social media, you know, there's, everything is like, it's a data focus. Like, I was looking at my YouTube account last night, because it, you know, we're coming up on the end of June, and I look every, I usually do it every 3 months, but every 6 months now, because, you know, everyone on this podcast knows I just had a baby. So I didn't get to do it in March because I had the baby in March, but I normally look at all of my social media results on a 3 month period. And for example, like, do you know what kind of information is available through YouTube? It's ridiculoso. Like, do you know that you can, they digitize people's attention spans. So like, if I'm giving a keynote speech, I can tell when people are paying attention or not. I can't really tell, actually. I can only tell if they're not paying attention if they look at their iPhone or they do something else. But I can't tell when they're not really watching. But on YouTube, YouTube will show you where people stop watching your video. They will actually show you when people click off of your video. And they will show you even how many likes a certain video got relative to other videos that you've done. It's amazing. Everybody look at, if you're on YouTube, financial advisors, go and look at YouTube analytics. It's an amazing, amazing data warehouse. And I was like, you know what? Well, I was having this data brainstorm. I was like, you know what? I want this. Like, I want more of this data. Where can I get more data?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And using the data within your own business, will allow you to see what opportunities you can invest in to most effectively grow. And as advisors are using data to make data-driven decisions, you know, you can see in your example exactly what's resonating and what isn't resonating. And advisors need to step back, use the data within their own firm to say, hey, where are we winning business? What segments are we seeing success in? What things could we do to double down and invest in those segments? Where can we make our brand experience and products, you know, our offerings better and better resonate within this specific niche? And it will help to, you know, essentially redefine the value proposition, redefine the brand experience, and, you know, win additional growth opportunities.
Oh yeah, profitability. Like, how many financial advisors know their actual profit margin? You know, I just had Jim Palumbo of Dynamic Advisors on here. Like, nobody knows that, right? How many financial advisors actually have their website hooked up to Google Analytics? Nobody does. Or if they do, they don't look at it.
Well, and I think that, you know, beyond Google Analytics, firms can now leverage tools like HubSpot or, you know, Pardot, you know, any type of tool that will help them tie marketing campaigns and marketing spend back to, you know, their sales funnel. So for instance, you know, firms that have done that, when they send out an email, they can identify when someone clicks on an email that they're interested in, they can get their IP address every single time that person then comes back to their website. They can know what areas of my homepage are they clicking on? What topics are they interested in? You can use those to then score that prospect so that once it achieves a certain milestone score at your firm, you can pick up the phone, reach out to that prospect, and odds are you'll know exactly what their areas of interest are. And you can talk to them in a very engaging way. You can address those opportunities and, you know, hopefully win that business. So using technology, using the way that we're all connecting and interacting with tech is going to be a huge driver to advisor success as we move forward.
I mean, just for the data element alone, like whether or not you, because advisors say, oh, my clients don't use technology. My clients are all 70-year-old, you know, people that don't have a computer. Yeah, okay. But still, like, you know, you may not communicate with them or even work with them using some of these tools. Like, you might have to actually fax or file or, like, go over and drop the paper report. They still might want to be communicated with this way. But in general, in your business, getting the data about what your business is doing and how it operates is invaluable. Even just that is invaluable, like just becoming more self-aware.
Absolutely. And if you look at some of those assumptions, I think it's a good idea for firms that have had those historical assumptions of, hey, my client prefers paper reports, or they prefer me to send them things in the mail. They prefer to come in and discuss. Those things have been true historically. As we move forward, you know, the baby boomer demographic still has the majority of the wealth in our country. So you might think, hey, high net worth baby boomers, you know, this is how they are used to engaging. This is the experience that we've had historically. That's true, but going forward, that's definitely not the case. If you look at how many of those higher net worth baby boomers are digitally connected, it's off the charts. It's over 90%. And as you look at serving that demographic, being able to provide a technology-enabled brand experience is absolutely critical.
Yeah. All right. Listen, Eric, we've got to wrap here. I just like to end with, you know, a grand finale. Give me three things real quick that advisors can take away from this show.
No, I'd go back to that cultural mindset of innovate, disrupt, and win. I hope advisors, you know, that are listening to this podcast are excited about the opportunities ahead. There's never been a better time to be in this business than right now. 10,000 baby boomers are retiring each and every day. That's the demographic that squarely needs advice. They need the help. And there's never been a better time to look at your business model, see where you can innovate, see what historical ways of thinking you can disrupt within your own firm to future-proof your business, and go out there and win more than your fair share of opportunities.
Using social media. Woohoo! Thanks for setting me up for the plug there, Eric. Okay, great. So, hey, everybody, Eric Clark of Orion, you know him, but in case you don't, I'm going to put his contact information or his firm information down below in the show notes. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Sarah Grillo podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review this show. Thank you. See you next time.